Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined now by John Authors, a senior editor for markets at Bloomberg, based in New York, and author of The Fearful Rise of Market, amongst other books. John, you're very welcome and good to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to be here.
Now, we saw the very successful direct flotation on the Nasdaq market of the cryptocurrency exchange platform Coinbase this week, and parallel to it, the price per unit of Bitcoin still pushing to amazing record levels. Reading your market analysis regularly, as I do, John, I get the impression that you still haven't made up your mind whether Bitcoin in particular and cryptocurrencies in general are still a speculative game on the part of many people, or is gaining substance and traction in markets generally?
Oh, it's gaining substance. That's obvious, because the sheer amount of money involved is now such that if something serious goes wrong again with the crypto world, it is going to have ripple effects. I don't think we're talking about a repeat of 2008 yet if the crypto balloon goes up, but it wouldn't be good. I'm in the awkward position where it doesn't appear to be a tulip bulb, which is what I had previously thought, simply because the crypto phenomenon keeps coming back. Also, plainly, there is some very interesting technology there. This could be a very exciting advance in the way we use money and the way we connect with each other, the blockchain and the concept of the cryptocurrency. I still find it very hard to imagine that this is going to settle down and be used as a currency, and that states are going to be comfortable with doing that, and that anybody really in the mainstream is going to be comfortable pricing anything in Bitcoin, given how very volatile it is. So I still have very grave doubts about it, but it's plainly something that can't be dismissed merely as a fad. I mean, there is an analogy with the dot-com bubble of 21 years ago. Amazon.com was part of that dot-com bubble and is now a dominant company. And the internet, as everybody thought at the time, has very much changed our lives. That didn't alter the fact that you shouldn't have gone near most of the things that were trading for vast multiples back in the year 2000. And there probably are analogies here. I think there are still going to be plenty of ways to lose money in crypto, even if it succeeds to the top level of what people are hoping for.
Why then, John, do you think that Bitcoin in particular is different than other, what an awful lot of people thought were was just another bubble? Why is it different?
Yes.
I mean, it has fallen in value spectacularly on a number of occasions, but recovered even stronger all the time, and we see more institutional support for it now, and even the likes of Goldman Sachs coming in behind it.
Yes, that is the critical point. It has formed a classic bubble, a tulip bubbles, tulip bulb, South Sea level bubble, at least four separate times. It's gone exponential. The growth has got ridiculous, and then it's crashed by 80%. And in all the famous bubbles I just mentioned, and there are others, you get that behavior, and then the bubble goes away. In the case of tulip bulbs or South Sea Forever, some of the others maybe limp along. But what has happened with Bitcoin is that it's rather like the Wile E. Coyote in the Roadrunner movies. It smashes into the ground from a great height, then sits up, brushes itself off, and comes back with another wheeze. That is the critical difference. My best guess at the moment is that this will turn out to be some kind of a variation on the theme of a bubble, but there is something about this technology that keeps it coming back. There is excitement there about something that appeals to a need. My best guess at present, which I've been writing about, is that it's perceived as being the best current alternative to fiat currencies. That's obviously a role that's been, fiat currencies replaced gold 50 years ago. And gold has long been seen as the preeminent alternative to fiat currencies that rely on governments accepting them. And Bitcoin is now beginning to take some share of that market, of some share of that demand for something that is perceived as not being fiat, that gives you some kind of protection against the possibility of debasement of fiat currency.
Fiat currency being currencies sponsored
like
by governments,
but with nothing
of intrinsic value backing them up, basically based on trust.
Yes.
And is there evidence, perhaps, John, that those who might have invested in gold when they worry about the value of fiat currencies going forward have moved some of their hedging investments into the likes of Bitcoin?
Circumstantial evidence, yes. It's been very intriguing to see gold. There have been negative flows from gold ETFs that have, in many cases, at the same time, overlapped with positive flows into Bitcoin funds. Correlation doesn't prove causation. If you look at the kind of research that people are putting out, similarly, some noticeable chunk of the money that has come into Bitcoin of late has been money that has been diverted from gold that would otherwise have gone from gold, or that it has come directly out of gold. I can't put a number on that for you, but I think it's pretty clear that some kind of a substitution is going on.
And that in itself may surprise people as well, because gold at least has some intrinsic value as for ornamentation and jewellery, which obviously Bitcoin doesn't.
Precisely. I'm speaking to you with a small quantity of gold wrapped around my ring finger, and there is no way I'm ever going to be swapping that for a wedding ring made out of Bitcoin. Exactly. Gold is certainly priced at far more than the value of, than its value for jewelry, but there is jewelry demand to fall back on. There is that intrinsic value in gold that should make it that much stronger an alternative to fiat than basically another currency in which you have to believe that people will keep accepting it because there's nothing else behind it, which is what Bitcoin is.
The other thing that may perplex a lot of observers, myself included, John, is that gold has a certain rarity value. There is ultimately a finite amount of the precious metal on Earth. Now, the Bitcoin supporters also say there's a finite amount of Bitcoin that can be mined, so to speak, or created.
Yes.
If that is the case, and I suspect there may be a technological way around it ultimately if they need it, you can obviously just go to another cryptocurrency and there are hundreds of them. So it doesn't necessarily have that rarity value.
Yes and no. It does have that rarity value, which increases its price, but could well limit its ability to be an alternative currency, because I think the total amount of Bitcoins that can be produced is not, I doubt very much that that's going to be sufficient to replace the dollar as a store of value. You do get interesting issues about network effects. Yes, you can produce other cryptocurrencies. Plenty of people have produced, they're sometimes called tokens, have produced cryptocurrencies for particular ventures and so on. But part of the case for investing in Bitcoin or regarding this as a real thing is that it builds out a network, that more people accept it, more people use it, you create the wallets and so on to make it easier to use. You can produce another cryptocurrency pretty easily. It's that much harder to create, to produce another currency that can move to a point where it is as potentially useful for transactions as Bitcoin is at this moment. Ethereum would be the other one, which plainly does have some kind of critical mass going for it at present. Many of the others don't. Now, that leads to all kinds of interesting questions again, that ultimately the value of this, you know, Bitcoin or whichever cryptocurrency would win the battle would be as dependent on people being prepared to accept it as is true of the dollar or the pound or the euro. It also means that you could have exactly the same phenomenon here that you had with the dot-com boom 21 years ago in terms of investment, that people would buy 50 different dot-com startups that were aiming to do online retailing on the basis that one of them will be Amazon and the rest go to nothing. You could easily imagine something happening along the same lines now, that people will sink money into all kinds of cryptocurrencies to try to ensure that they catch the winning one and thereby lose that much more than they otherwise would have done. I think we can agree that if it becomes clear that people aren't using any given cryptocurrency, it becomes worthless. It would go to zero.
We're talking elsewhere on this week's program, John, about the massive fiscal stimulus being generated by the Biden administration in the US, and obviously something similar happening in Europe. To what extent do you think the current frenzy, if I may call it that, in underpinning the price of Bitcoin in particular, and the very successful flotation of Coinbase, is being supported to a degree by fears on the part of investors, serious investors, who worry that this massive fiscal stimulus will generate significant inflation and undermine the value of the dollar and other fiat currencies?
To a fairly great extent. I mean, this is what you would expect when governments are expansive, that those who are inclined to worry about fiat currencies will become more worried. I'm sure that the fact that the large and clear-cut group of people who are concerned about growing government deficits are ever more concerned, and that's a big part of the appeal of Bitcoin at present. It's one of the things that explains why it's doing so well, but also gives cause for concern. It's got a very clear and attractive story behind it. There is a narrative that you buy into when you buy Bitcoin, but that narrative is distinctly ideological and distinctly prone to being blown in other ways. You could also incidentally say something similar about ESG investing. The idea of investing in stocks with a view to encouraging environmental, social, and governance factors, that this has a very appealing story attached to it. A story helps you sell something, but political fashions change, political beliefs change. The fact that it has that clear a link to, you know, this broad popular school of thought helps for the time being, and this is true of both ESG and crypto, but could, you know, does mean that there are serious risks ahead if fiscal stimulus works, if people decide that they have had enough of the more recent model of capitalism, don't mind a more statist approach for a few decades, which is possible. That's you're going to feel rather awkward about having paid so much for Bitcoin.
Our guest here on News Talk is John Authors, a senior markets editor at Bloomberg, based in New York. Do you worry, and we have explored the idea of the world's major central banks creating their own digital currencies over the coming years, John, but do you worry that before that outcome might happen, that there could be a serious crash in the whole value of Bitcoin, and as more institutions and as more significant investors get involved, that could have systemic impact on the banking and other markets?
I guess the short answer is yes. I mean, obviously, there's every chance that we could have another really big crash in the price of Bitcoin because we've seen so many already. I see no reason why that can't happen again. In terms of systemic effects elsewhere, that is more complicated. I mean, plainly, you've now got Coinbase, which, you know, it's the last I checked, the share price was still going down. But it's still, I think at this point, worth more than any exchange, any financial exchange in the world. It would, as of the close last night, it would have been one of the 100 largest companies in the US by market cap, which is extraordinary. You do therefore see risks of something serious happening elsewhere if belief in crypto really implodes again. In terms of the use of the word systemic, I don't think we're talking about something as truly fundamental to the system as mortgage finance. The last crisis, I and many other people still tend to think, is this another Lehman? I don't think there is enough money tied up in crypto for this to be close to another Lehman. I don't think there is enough money committed to it by any banks for it to cause institutional collapse of any systemically important institution yet. Would it hurt and have clear effects on asset prices across the system? Probably at this point, yes, it would be a negative event that would reverberate across the system, but I don't think it would be existential for the system as a whole.
Well, let's hope that doesn't come to pass. If I could make a pretty sharp segue, hopefully it's a segue, John. Bernie Madoff, he left us this week.
Talking of Ponzi schemes, yes, let's go from crypto to Bernie Madoff, yes.
I was trying to be a little bit more subtle than that, yes, but yes. Your point is right. I saw you reflecting on him, and particularly interesting, I thought, was your analysis of how he took so many people in for so long. And one of the key reasons was he was extremely detailed in terms of the actual statements of accounts that he delivered to people every year.
Yes. Yes. I mean, this was the thing. It was internally, the thing that continues to baffle me is that the kind of talents you needed to pull off such a deception for so long implies that he would have made himself unbelievably rich just being honest. This was a really difficult thing to pull off for as long as he did. But yes, you got very detailed statements that were internally significant, internally consistent, lots of different detail on which positions they'd moved you into and out of, very polite customer service, got your money back nicely and quickly when you asked for it, which isn't surprising because all they ever did, it turns out, was stick it in an account in a checking account at Cape Chase Manhattan, so it wasn't difficult for them to pay money out in a hurry, and that gave it a sense of legitimacy. I mean, I think the other point that obviously there's plenty of people saying, well, the victims have only themselves to blame. They were greedy, and they were caveat emptor should apply. It wasn't as though they'd checked this out very carefully. There's something to that, but Madoff was very clever here. The way he made money was indeed far too good to be true, but it was by making 10% or so every year without fail, very, very consistently, which to most reasonable-minded people who don't know a lot about finance seems much more sensible, much more easy to believe than, say, Bitcoin. Any sensible person, even if you believe in Bitcoin, you can see that there are lots of risks there, that this is something speculative. Go to somebody who says, I am the former chairman of NASDAQ. I come recommended by a bunch of your best friends, including your rabbi, quite possibly, because he really made hay with the Jewish community. use of affinity fraud. And here, what I'm saying, what I'm doing is this is a, I'm not shooting for the sky, just year after year, I'm going to compound for you at 10-ish percent. That doesn't, in the fullness of time, after 20 years of always managing to make 10%, that's obviously too good to be true. But I don't think a reasonable non-greedy person who wants a sensible conservative investment to, you know, for their family, I'm not at all sure that did sound too good to be true. It appeals to almost a protective conservative influence rather than being like, again, this is true of Bitcoin or the dot-com boom or whatever, that a classic bubble, a classic scam involves people getting, like in the cartoons, with the dollar signs come up in their eyeballs as they see the possible excitement. Madoff very cunningly really didn't present himself as anything like that. And I think that was, you know, I mean, to have managed a scheme like this for as long as he did does begin to get him into the genius category, the evil genius category. But, you know, it's extraordinary that he got away with this as long as he did. And that, I think, is a key part of this. He appealed to conservatism and appeared to be conservative. And you needed a long-term perspective and quite a good grasp of finance to realize that this was way, way, way too good to be true.
A fascinating week in many different ways, but we'll leave it there, John. That's John Authors, a senior markets editor at Bloomberg based in New York and author of The Fearful Rise of Markets, amongst other books. John, thanks as always for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.